I was cleaning the other day, and I found this giant "I love AOL" bumper sticker from God knows when.
You're gonna put it on the Ramoa?
I thought about it. I'm like, if it wasn't a Ramoa, I would do it, but maybe I'll do it with Scotch tape.
Oh, that's great. You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller. So we start off episode 127 with a look back on, I guess, the end of 2016. Happy New Year to our listeners. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
And,
Happy
yeah. New Year.
Is this and a kind record of, for most consecutive episodes that all three of us have been on in a while?
Yeah. How many has Foz been on? Two or three in the last?
I'm excited. And I missed
this
one
might be number,
at one
this
point.
This might be number three.
And hey, you never know. Next show, we might actually have the producer back on. Maybe.
Crazy talk.
I know. It's insane. But let's talk about last year and kind of what we learned in the last 2 weeks. Anything? I personally learned that United not providing elite qualification statements can be detrimental, as my wife missed silver status by $65. So... She got all the miles. She didn't get the spin.
Oopsie.
No free bag for her.
She's behind me right now looking at me like, really? Like, just eyes agape. So
what kind of accountant are you?
Yeah, I was going to say, you understand that it was your responsibility to make that work for her, right? Like, you're the one in trouble totally. Here, not her.
I know, totally.
Making sure.
So that was a little annoying, but oh well, no big deal. Foz, what about you? What did you learn?
I learned that we've got some sort of race to the bottom as far as transatlantic fares. I mean, Norwegian just launched a sale at $139 each way, which I feel is cheaper than going to like Boston or even across the country.
Is that out of all their hubs or out of all their destinations, or is it just East Coast?
I actually didn't look.
Yeah.
I was just reading the headline. I'm like, how is this even possible?
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that. I think we should talk about this more when we talk about our lines for this episode, but, yeah, definitely an interesting turn of events on the long-haul market.
I'm excited.
and Seth, what did you learn besides that?
Besides that, I actually have two things. Bonus learning that I didn't even mention when we were planning the show. One of the things I learned is SpaceX is going to launch again. They have claimed that they figured out all the problems with the explosion late last year. And they're set to launch again on January 8th, so very soon. And the first satellite to go up, the first launch to go up has 10 Iridium satellites in it. And Iridium has been sort of teasing out, like, satellites are loaded, rocket is ready, kinds of posts on Twitter for a while. But there was never a date. And as of Monday morning, the 2nd, they've decided that they're ready to go and they put a date on it. So that's exciting. For a variety of reasons. One, I think rocket launches are cool. Two, Iridium updating its system is good for flight tracking. Those new satellites have ADS-B receivers on them.
Oh, sweet.
So for the geekiness of all of us, that's a good thing. The second thing I learned, someone on Twitter asked me if I knew a way to find all of the sort of fancy hotels, I'm calling it, the Amex Fine Hotels and Resorts, Virtuoso, and Visa Premium Hotels, whatever their program is called. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, and I thought it was stupid, but I did it anyways. And so basically... there's something like 3,000 properties that participate in all the programs, and 500 of those properties participate in more than one. I thought that was an interesting sort of overlap.
Wow, so, that's a lot.
More data to come on that as I finally get the webpage, you know, from heinously awful but viable to actually usable. But you know. I'm not going to say like to good because you all have seen my product and none of it's good, but it goes from like disgusting to vaguely usable.
It's functional.
It's functional. I'm working towards functional still. Right now, it's just this nasty Google map with like 3,000 pins on it.
I mean, your product is excellent. It's just the UI, but yeah. It's more about the data that's valuable.
Well, win some.
I don't think this group is. We're very concerned about pretty. I mean, we use United.com.
Zing.
If you're listening to the show, folks that we know at United, we apologize.
You know, actually, I don't think we need to apologize for that one. The site has a lot of problems right now.
It is. It's been very buggy recently. Yeah.
We call that tough love, Stephen. Tough love.
Dot-wise, so we've got three dots. we're going to talk about SNA, John Wayne Airport, DCA, National, and then Phoenix.
Ronald Reagan two, National. Come on, if we're
Ronald
giving them
I
names,
call it National.
It'll always be National.
I know, I know. And so you give John Wayne his named airport, but not Reagan?
Yeah, true. The giver. So for John Wayne, Southwest is, what is it? They're cutting seven? Is it seven flights?
Yeah, they lost a bunch of slots.
And it's about 1 million passenger seats in 2017 that they're losing.
Yes, daily departures adds up to 1 million seats over the course of a year.
That's nuts. It's a lot of people. But why the losing of the slots? Like, what's the story behind them losing the slots?
Well, that airport is slot controlled, so it's limited and it's based on noise. I think sort of similar to Long Beach, where they can only have so many departures at any point. And each year they get reallocated.
Mm.
And historically, other airlines like sort of had their allowance and chose not to use them. And so they went back into a pool and Southwest took them. And this year, those other airlines want to use them. So there's fewer extra slots available for Southwest. So Delta, United, and Alaska all chose to add new routes. And that's causing these to be cut.
Interesting.
So yeah, it is interesting, and I'm trying to see if I have the list here of what they're cutting.
I have it right here. It's Mexico City, Puerto Vallarta, Austin, Kansas City, Missouri, Portland, St. Louis, and Seattle.
Yeah.
All gone.
So it's tough. I know the Kansas City route was brand new.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking. So, you know, and from what I understand of the guys, you know, from data from the folks in Kansas City who I know who do route development out there, it was high load factors, unclear, you know, what the yields were, but high load factors on that route and still dropping it. So it sort of sucks.
Yeah, and kind of in talking about that, like, so Alaska is actually going to pick up Puerto Vallarta and Mexico City out of Cabo San Lucas and Puerto Vallarta will be available on Alaska, which is kind of it's interesting because that's kind of Alaska going after those two markets, especially Puerto Vallarta, which Southwest is giving up.
Yeah, well, I mean, Alaska, it's sort of like Hawaii for Alaska. It's a good leisure destination that commands decent fares, and they fly it from a lot of places, don't they?
Yeah, I think they have flights. I mean, they have a seasonal flight from here. They have a flight from Seattle. They have L.A. I think San Francisco has one. So
yeah, so it seems like just sort of one of those destinations that they're, if they can build it up, if they're sort of building up the Mexican Pacific Coast the same way they built up Hawaii for service. It's for the size of planes they have in their target market, it's a good way to build traffic.
Yeah. Yep.
Sorry. That's one of those things I feel like even if Southwest didn't give it up, they could have kept it and probably fought well.
Done okay. Yeah, they probably could have done all right. And then at Reagan, at National, they're actually losing three other slot pairs because of the restrictions being lifted at Newark, right? That's how that's working?
Yes. It's a bizarre follow-on. Not bizarre, obviously. It's, you know, it happens. But it's a sort of some years later follow-on from the a deal struck with AirTran and Continental, so pre-mergers.
Wow.
AirTran leased a bunch of slots from Continental, and it was a trade DCA for Newark, and Continental wanted more Newark slots. But now that Newark has gone open, the slots at DCA are reverting.
Wow.
So, you know, in Southwest, if you include Baltimore as part of the DC area, Southwest still has a ton of capacity.
Yeah, and those three slots will go to United, right?
Yeah, they go back to United, which added, I want to say, like a Newark, a Chicago, and a Houston flight. Nothing fun.
Yeah, yeah. Surprisingly, they're still only running one a day, San Francisco, which they have the
that's a perimeter exception.
That's a slot. Yeah, that's a slot issue.
Because they got the perimeter rule, you know, they averted the perimeter rule, right, for that one.
You get the number of perimeter rule exceptions is limited by Congress.
Yeah.
And so, gotcha. Basically, you know, if you can get enough West Coast people to less West Coast states to lobby hard enough for you, but there's not enough, you know, it's basically, you know, the California, Oregon, and Seattle and Washington lobby pool is where the hubs are and where the destinations are, and you need a lot of like Midwest or Rockies area to sort of push some of those
approve it
votes through, and they're not getting it. And there's no hubs because there's no hubs in those states.
Yep.
Right. You're not going to launch service to Boise.
No.
So getting Iowa in your favor might be hard.
Yeah, unless you want to get into Smizik trouble or something, right? I went there. What else we got? We got American at Phoenix as another dot, and they're cutting back there pretty significantly, right? They've 3 years into the merger now, they're shrinking Phoenix pretty significantly. I think the passenger count through October is down like something like almost 2%. But Los Angeles and Denver are both up for them for American. So
it's interesting that Denver's up.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of strange. What do you guys think of this? I mean, Phoenix has always kind of been a weird hub spot. I mean, it made sense for America West and U.S. Airways, I guess. But for American, does it really fit in because of their presence, their really large presence at LAX?
Maybe.
The silence there was deafening.
I want to say that they've all – like. If you look at Phoenix, you would expect it to go away at some point anyways because of the constant pressure from Southwest.
Yeah.
It's evident that U.S. didn't put a lot of focus on it because they never did much in the way of international from there.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to do international from there, though. I mean, where are you going to go?
You could go to Europe. Connecting traffic is connecting traffic. I mean, they connect a ton of people there.
Yeah, but they could connect them better in Philly and Charlotte and have shorter, right? I think part of that's fleet utilization.
Mm.
Out and back, it gets a little harder to do single plane turns.
Absolutely agree. Ironic part is at the same time, BA is adding another flight to Phoenix.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up, is BA is adding 3X weekly service summer only, an extra 747. And the flight times are awful, but they let you do early connections out of Heathrow.
I don't know where the BA is getting all these planes from. They must have nothing better to do with their planes at this point.
Yeah, that one's – and it's also very weird that it's only 3X. We got to figure out the calendar, you know, for what next summer is getting 4X, the other four, half of that sort of weekly slot utilization. But it's I agree. There's got to be some traffic there. I don't know. Maybe the challenge – certainly we're seeing things change with respect to – alliances and transatlantic route performance in general. And we may be shifting from dot into lines here a little bit, but you know, Faz, you mentioned the super cheap transatlantic fares. We've got British Airways promising a low cost carrier long haul out of Barcelona. Right. I mean, there's a lot of and we've got Norwegian in addition to its current $139 fares, still planning on starting up 737 flights this summer, also across the Atlantic. And I'm sure there's other transatlantic idiocy that I've missed in that brief recap. So there's a lot going on there. I don't know. It's crazy.
I don't think, you know, Foz, back to your point about transatlantic stuff out of Phoenix. I think that because it's so isolated to the Southwest, like Phoenix physically is so far Southwest that it's you wouldn't fly from, say, Portland or Seattle down to Phoenix to fly to Europe, or maybe you would. I don't know. But it just seems like it's kind of out of the way for that.
But there's Southern California is an easy connection. They have a bunch of secondary routes in Arizona and New Mexico.
True.
Those are all easy connections, right?
Yeah.
True.
So the opportunity was there. They just never did anything. Well, they didn't even try.
Yeah. I wonder if part of that is performance, aircraft performance. I mean, is it far enough that you wouldn't be the high temperatures have had their impact, certainly for peak summer season to Europe. That's also peak airplanes can't take off from Phoenix season, right? Or they need longer runways. And they've got them, but you're talking about heavier planes with the extra fuel to go that far. I just wonder if there was something that got in the way there.
Yeah, but BA can fly a 744, so I don't think that's a valid argument.
True, but I mean, but then US only had 330s, right, and 76s. Right.
But they require less runway than the 74.
True. Yeah, it's 5,600 miles from Phoenix to Madrid. I'm just thinking of who their partners are. So it'd be, you know, they could do London Heathrow for connecting traffic, Madrid. Where else? I think that's really – those would be the big ones, right?
Yeah.
Maybe Dublin. Yeah, so maybe that's it too. Is like, where do you feed the traffic? out of Phoenix into Europe? Do you feed it through London? If you're going to do that, well, then you already have the BA flights, or you're sending your folks through LA, and that's where you're doing your connection.
And also remember that when US had a big opportunity to grow that, they were part of Star Alliance. So they had Lufthansa, they had United doing all that traffic.
They were Frankfurt. Small.
They focused on the Caribbean, Latin America, and it worked, but they were small, and now they got to compete. And I mean, even Phoenix didn't make much sense for Caribbean and Latin America, just based on
But I mean, this raises an interesting concern, which is, you know, clearly what's happening with American is they're moving more stuff to LA, and you know, we saw that saw them closing or reducing the pilot base in Phoenix, and they've made some comments about how the growth will really come out of LA. At a time when LA is starting to get very constrained between Delta, American, and United, all claiming to have hubs there.
It's packed.
It's packed.
And it's going to be more packed as they do construction over there at T2 and stuff now.
Yeah, and there's a gate problem. I mean, Delta doesn't have enough gates. American doesn't have enough gates. United is actually fortunate because they have two terminals unlike the other two. But it raises an interesting challenge as to what happens to LAX as all this stuff is going on.
I think you're going to see more and more. I mean, there's already been issues. I've seen people post on Twitter and Flyer talk about waiting for a gate for 45 minutes at LAX, which used to never happen. I mean, it was always kind of straight in. You might wait for someone to come out of the alleyway, but never that long.
That was one of the best things about LAX is there's almost never any delays going in or going out.
Yeah, and now it's starting to back up a little bit. So something to watch and something to be aware of as a traveler, especially as T2 construction starts and the Virgin Alaska merger takes place and they move things around at LA, things like that. I think it's something to be aware of if you're connecting through there, for sure. Yeah. Lines. Air Berlin is convinced they're going to grow a transatlantic market with Berlin, Miami, and others. And this is after our last show when Air Berlin said we may just get eaten up by Lufthansa and Eurowings. What's going on here? I don't get it.
I know I forgot one when I was ranting about transatlantic capacity growth. It was this one. Well, added bonus, they initially filed it as an A320, which was fun to read for a hot second until everybody realized that A320s can't make those flights. They want to fly Berlin. It's summer. Peak additional frequencies, right? It's a few a day to Miami and a few a day to JFK on top of some of the other stuff they've already got. So it's nice growth. It's, you know, good for the company in theory, and they are going to be on A330s, not A320s. But it's, again, with a ton of extra capacity going in, and, like, where the hell are all these people going to come from? And, oh, by the way, they've been losing money hand over fist, and so how is trying to fight it out in a market that is reasonably competitive and seeing continued pressure on yields a good choice there, especially when you no longer have feed from the European side and you're not part of the transatlantic joint venture operations.
The other interesting thing is with the economy downturn in Europe. I mean, travelers in Europe are traveling less, and that has to be impacting these airlines.
Yeah. I mean, there's some really low cost business fares out of Europe to the U.S. So, Seth, you'd mentioned the IAG long-haul low-cost carrier out of Barcelona. What is that? Like, how does that tie in with Air Berlin?
Well, I'm not sure it necessarily ties directly into Air Berlin, but it's going to be competition against – and it's probably not going to be up and running fast enough for this season to matter. But it's going to be competition just in terms of general transatlantic growth. Norwegian actually was set to hub some 787s at Barcelona, I think this coming summer, so that it's more directly in them. But it's going to be an interesting one. It's unclear which of the IAG brands it will operate under, or if it's going to be a new one. Right? It could be Vueling long haul. Could it be something new? We don't know.
Vueling long haul. That just makes me. That makes my ass hurt. and my knees. I mean that as far as like the comfort level on their planes. It just. Oh man, reading trip reports from them, like it seems like everyone's miserable on those planes.
Hey, I did it last January on our way to Portugal. I flew them from Bologna to Barcelona. Actually, it was cozy. I don't remember being awful. I think I probably paid for exit row.
Yeah,
that's my general approach on those airlines. Is for $10, I will very happily be comfortable and still pay a lot less than I would have on a mainline carrier.
To be fair. to be fair, we flew on TAP, a friend of ours and myself. Foz, were you on TAP as well?
Yes, because we connected in Lisbon, because we all flew to Lisbon together.
Yeah, and I have to say the TAP seats, that's the closest I've ever sat to the seat in front of me.
Yeah, those seats are tight. They just did a new product, though. I think you guys had the old one, and they've just done a new one that is slimline, so it's supposed to be better. Were you guys still on I think you guys may have been on the wide.
They were really thick.
The thick seats, yeah. So they pitched them down, they'd gone down to 29 or 30-inch pitch, but hadn't used slimline seats. So there was, like, zero personal space.
That's exactly right.
The new product that they've rolled out short haul has fixed that problem, so to speak, but fixed it by going with slimline seats, but still tight pitch. And they were all the fuckers.
The TAP wasn't so as bad as the Air Portugalia fucker 100.
I said those are gone.
Yes, thank God. That was an experience.
Yeah, it was. That was.
So you guys did a
we were on that
Fokker 100.
Yeah, we went up to Brussels from Porto.
See, I did a Fokker. I think I did a Fokker 70 to Amsterdam. Then that same, I think it was a 70. I think it was Portugalia. Maybe it was a 100. But that was a pretty beat up plane. That was one of the few planes where I'm like, this is kind of shady for a Western European carrier.
I also got threatened for taking photos.
Well, that's right. I forgot about that.
I never wrote that story. I really need to. It was so much fun.
We completely got off topic. But
So anyways, back to Vueling long haul, or IAG long haul out of Barcelona. It's, right, if you look at the Gatwick-Oakland flight and things like that, it's clear British Airways intends to compete by following the sort of Norwegian game plan, taking advantage of hubs where it has operations or places where it has decent feed regionally, and then cramming hundreds of people onto planes and bring them across the ocean. And that's arguably how you make money at $130 a ticket, in theory, if you sell all of them.
Well, this feels like we're going back to 2010, like around that time, 2010, 2009 timeframe, when fares were $250 to Europe round trip and coach.
In the winter,
In the winter, for sure. And the planes were going out pretty much empty for the most part. I mean, I remember flying in January of 2009, and it was on a 777 to, I think, Amsterdam or Frankfurt. And I had a whole row, not just my three seats, but like the three seats in the middle and the three seats across, completely empty.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference this time around is they're going out that way, and they're full.
Yeah.
Right there, there's still a lot of cheap fares, but they're going out full.
Yep. And they'll probably go out full through the summer season, and the demand will be there. Yep, at higher rates. I mean, you're happy about it, Seth. I mean, but you've got a six-hour flight to Europe.
Yes. Right?
And so for you, it's a little less painful. For us from the West Coast, it's a little more painful. So do you think the majors, Delta, United, American, will match these prices? Or are they just going to be happy with their $450 ticket, $500 ticket, and they'll sell them at that rate?
It's two different audiences, right? Because the people who are buying the $300 ticket will go fly whoever it is, whereas the people who have some sort of loyalty will pay the extra $150, $200.
True.
But will they?
I would.
Okay. I haven't. So, you know, some days I do, some days I don't. And I think that's the big problem that the airlines are fighting with now. It's sort of the genesis of basic economy products, right? How do you get people – how do you sort of subdivide your product into different offerings for different levels of price-sensitive customers? And I'm not sure that – you know, you can say, oh, well, if people are doing a search and they can find it, they're going to absolutely fly this or that based on, you know, a $50 difference because they're loyal, or a $100 difference because they're loyal. At some point you hit a number, you're like, yes, I want to be loyal, I want my points, I want my status, whatever, but, like, how much am I paying to get there? I think more and more people are starting to ask that question often enough.
With fares the way they are, could the airlines theoretically – I'm thinking of American, Delta, and United – could they theoretically drop the PQD, the qualifying dollar – the spend amount from their elite programs and to draw more people in. So they keep the fares the same, but they say, well, now you don't have to meet this minimum spend anymore to try and draw people back.
I don't think they need people in the program. I think if anything, they need to reduce the number of people in the programs.
You want them to raise the number.
Yeah, yeah. That's what's happening, right? There's so many elites right now. Just look at, because it dilutes the overall benefit for the people who are elites, right? We all see it. We go to the airport, we get in the elite line. How long is it?
Yeah.
Right. And so the real challenge is they need to thin that. So I don't see, if anything, I see PQDs going up, especially with airfares going down.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I think because airfares have gone down in some markets, and again, it's only some markets, right? There's, I think some domestic markets are still going up, not like the transatlantic space. And even South America is starting to recover a little bit. But I don't think that it makes sense to drop PQDs at all. I think, you know, Americans should be very happy not to give me elite status instead of giving me Platinum Pro or whatever.
I mean, I think at the rate we're going, it's going to be easier to go cross-country via Europe than it is going to be to go cross-country domestically from a cost perspective.
Just open jaw it.
Open jaw.
Yeah. Two tickets.
Cabotage be damned.
Well, how did you get to Boston? Well, I went via Copenhagen.
And... Newark, Copenhagen, Boston. It's a typical routing.
Like, I have to go to San Francisco next week. I bought this ticket 3 weeks ago. You know, it's after New Year's and everything. It was an $800 ticket.
Round trip?
Round trip.
Holy crap. That's nuts.
Yeah. And if Norwegian's selling sub-$300 tickets to Europe and sub-$300 tickets to the U.S. from Europe, it's cheaper to do that.
Yep. Yep. Just gotta tell, you have to explain to your boss why it took you 2 days to get there.
Well, yeah.
Still faster than the train, though, so you know.
Let's see. What else we have left? We have our destination, Belfast. Oz, you were just there.
Yes. I'm
jealous.
I decided to go there before United dropped the route. And I have to say, I was very pleasantly surprised. So what I've learned is they've got two airports. They've got the city airport. And they've got the international airport. And the international airport is all low-cost carriers and United. That's it. But they had a nice – they had a number one lounge. It was actually pretty nice.
Interesting.
So and the airport was easy to get in, get out. It's actually a really pleasant airport. It's out in the sticks, but it was a 20-quid Uber ride.
Oh.
So it wasn't too bad. It's all highway driving. It was about 25, 30 minutes. No stopping whatsoever. The city airport's kind of neat because it's just on the outskirts of the city along the water. But it's mostly prop planes. It's mostly FlyBE that flies in and out of there. And it reminded me very much of London City, where like the gates are basically on the ground, and it reminded me of B-84 at Houston, where they've got that long fake
tunnel.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit exactly. Like Porter's operation in Toronto too, right on the water like that.
Yeah, I see. I haven't done Porter, so I can't compare it to that.
Well, then just trust that I'm right. Everything will be fine.
I trust you.
Or something like that.
Exactly. Oh, I'll give it to you. Sure. No, but Belfast as a town was really cool, too. It was very walkable. It was small. I was able to pretty much walk around all of the core part of town in, within a day. But it was.
Where did you stay?
I stayed at the Hilton, which is – the location was great. The hotel itself was a little disappointing. The lounge was great. But, the room wasn't very well maintained. It was kind of flying United these days.
It's like flying a 752. How was your seat over? Did it actually work?
This seat worked. It was the first seat I've had in like six transatlantic flights that actually didn't have any issues. Actually, I should take that back. The USB port was broken.
You can't. Wait, that's a voucher. That's a voucher.
I haven't gotten a single voucher. I always tell them they write it up. I don't get anything in return.
So you had a lot of fun, though. It was good.
I had a great
time. Did you make it out to Giants Causeway?
No, I did not. Okay. I'll be back in June on the return portion of my ticket.
Nice.
Of course you will. Are you going to Oslo from there?
Say, when in June?
I think June 8th.
Okay. But it was in Europe at the end of the month. I'm looking for something.
The Belfast to Philadelphia was a $1,400 business class ticket.
Wow.
And you could route it through Newark and Houston on the way to Philadelphia.
That's a legacy continental thing. Man, the Philly routings via Houston to Europe.
I am surprised they are still there.
That's wow. Well, not for long now that you mentioned it on the show. Yeah. One thing we forgot to mention, I forgot to talk about it, was this new kind of a cool line. Winair is adding St. Bartholomew to Saba service.
Saba.
Saba? Saba? Saba?
Saba.
Saba.
That's how I was told when I said it at the Winair check-in counter, and the woman was like, didn't understand me. It was like I was speaking a different language.
So they're gonna fly St. Martin, St. Bartholomew, Saba, St. Martin.
Yeah, trying to
schedule. Yeah, which is awesome. So if you want a cool line, Winair.
Not only is it a cool line, I mean, it's a very short flight, relatively distance-wise. I haven't looked it up, but it's, you know, these little islands aren't far apart. But Saba is the world's shortest commercial runway. It's like 1,500 feet or something like that, slightly on an angle on the side of a cliff sticking out with ocean at both ends. It's like LaGuardia, but much steeper cliff drops, mountain, and, you know, a quarter of the
length. Oh, yeah, they land uphill to help it stop.
Some days. Right, I remember we landed downhill.
Watching that. You did?
Yeah, it's just winds. We landed downhill today. I did it. The flight I took on was literally fly straight at the mountain, and when you get close to it, turn left and slam the thing down on the runway. Also, the Winair ground handling in Saba will, like, rate slash guess who the pilot is based on the style of the landing. I was delayed. I was sitting there chatting with the baggage handlers, and they landed like, you know, whatever the guy's name was landed this. I'm like, you guys pay for it. And they were right. I mean, they know who it is based on that.
That's awesome. We should do this. We should just get together and go do this, just like to fly the triangle route and then hang out in St. Martin and watch planes all day.
All right. Fod's going to be in Belfast when I'm there, I'm afraid. But maybe it's the week after that. I'm giving you guys some dates. I'm actually scheduled to go in June. So
only if we can fly from there to the Azores and take that Azores-Oakland flight.
Oh, yeah. Apparently they ran it last year, too. It's not as exciting as I thought it was.
Yeah.
But the other
it's still exciting.
Sorry, I still want to go back to this Winair thing. The other thing that's exciting about the other end of the trip is St. Bart's is a ridiculous landing also because there's, again, mountains right at the end of the runway. But this one you actually fly, like, between two peaks, and then it's, like, the nose of the plane is pointed down instead of pitched up as you're doing the final approach. It's crazy. And you, like, slide – the airplane slides down the side of the hill and then lands.
Is this the one when you got in trouble for taking pictures?
No, I didn't get in trouble taking pictures. I got in trouble because we – tried to stay out of traffic and sat on the back side of the fence to protect ourselves, but by sitting on the back side of the fence, we had trespassed onto airport property. And it's like a wooden whatever fence. It wasn't like chain link or anything. Like it wasn't like a big deal to jump the fence. We just were like sitting there, but we got in trouble. And we actually saw a plane go around because of us.
You were the cause of.
I actually caused a go around. It was pretty cool.
Two other stories. Superjet. So the SSJ, is that what it is? SSJ-100?
Yeah, right? Sukhoi.
They went underneath an inspection, so they had some issues with the tail, right? There was some corrosion and
like
wear.
A hinge somewhere, metal fatigue and a hinge somewhere in the tail or something like that.
Yeah, and so some of them have been grounded to be fixed.
Yeah.
And I think Interjet had a few.
Interjet had 11 grounded planes.
That's a lot.
Half the fleet.
Really. And then I think Aeroflot had some, and then don't they have like a couple of charters or private jets out there as well?
So. CityJet actually flies a couple of them.
Yeah.
All theirs are still flying. There's some weird, the IR Aero or something like that was actually the first airline to found it, which is a Russian something that's using sort of, Aeroflot hand-me-downs.
and Aeroflot's already handing.
I think it's sort of just, you know, leasing out to the regional operator kind of thing. Like a match or whatever. But they were the ones that discovered it, so they had a couple that were already also affected. That's it's a little bizarre of a situation. It's hard to tell exactly what the impact is and like what matters.
Yeah.
But they said, it's easy. They're all going to be fixed very soon. It only takes a day or two to fix them. We've got the parts. But it's going to take at least a month to do all of them. So,
okay.
Yeah.
It's a little awkward.
But they were able to get all the inspections done very quickly, but they did find a bunch of others that were also affected. So that's not great news, but they found them before there were any problems, so that is great news.
Yep, very true. And then Berlin Airport, the new airport, delayed again. Any surprise? Not really.
That they chose to announce it, or?
Well, I mean, it's just delayed like another year. I don't even know why you'd announce it at this point. Just be like, no, we're not open yet. They need one of those like single serving websites. Is Berlin
Airport
open? Is Willy Brandt Airport open? No. that would be – I'm going to make that, I think. It's going to be a Tumblr. So, yeah.
You list it next to mundosurfer.tumblr.com?
Yeah, it'll be right next to it. Exactly. You guys got any other news stories? Anything else you guys can think of? Anything else you want to talk about? What else random things we have going on? That's a short show. We don't talk about anything right into the new year.
Well, this is always a quiet time of year, right?
Yeah, true.
That's true. A theory.
Other than the moment of silence for all the zeros in everyone's accounts.
Yes, that's true. Reset day.
I celebrate reset day. Give me more.
So I kind of have a New Year's question for you guys. Like, where are you looking forward to going in 2017?
The addresser question.
Yeah, I thought Cynthia asked this question on Twitter. I thought it was a really good question.
One of our frequent guests. She did put it out on Twitter. I actually like your list, Stephen.
You do?
Yeah.
Eastern Europe?
A lot of Eastern Europe in there. I got some interesting ones. I have like half my year planned already, which is bizarre for me, or at least half of my year planned already. The first half of the year's got a bunch of stuff already in the calendar. Mm-hmm. It's mostly places I've already been, which is a little bit of a bummer. But some of it's good. Some of it's just is what it is. I've got Grand Canyon on there, though, which I didn't mention online. That's a new one for me. I'm looking forward to that. And I'm still considering the North Korea air show.
And when is that?
September.
September. I might be able to make that work. We'll see.
Yeah, I know I know one of the guys who runs one of the tour companies that does it. Like, North Korea is weird. You got to be part of the thing and do the stuff, and like you have no choice in sort of how any of it goes. But it's an interesting option.
Do you go into Beijing and then on to Pyongyang?
They have options from Beijing, Shanghai, and one other random city. I think it's probably a shorter flight, but it's based on the company and the length and the this and the that.
Gotcha. Grand Canyon would be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We're going to be there mid-March, late March.
Oh, nice.
Something like that.
Yeah. So. Might still be cold. Might actually have some snow on the ground stuff there still. Yeah. What about you, Foz?
Haven't even thought about it.
Hadn't even thought about it.
I mean, I could say the de facto Oslo and Copenhagen, but, you know, that's overplayed at this point.
Places you're looking forward to going, not just places you have to because that's what the fairs are.
I don't know. I really honestly haven't thought about it. I mean, it's funny because, you know, Seth's saying how he's got his year plan. I'm like, I only have trips booked like in January and February, and then I've got nothing, which is strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine is centered around a lot of trade shows.
I think, you know, Foz, I'm kind of with you. I don't have anything planned past January, really. So, but is there anywhere you're looking forward to, I guess? Or is there anywhere you would want to go in 2017?
I would love to go back and spend more time in Paris. I haven't really spent much time there in years.
Come to the Paris Air Show.
I just might.
Seriously.
We'll have to talk about dates and stuff.
18 to 23, something like that?
Oh, so it wouldn't be too hot yet. So that'd be a nice time to go. Be good.
Your ideas intrigue me.
I'm going to be there. I'm already booked.
I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
Exactly.
You can do that at moredotsmorelines.com or at blog.wander.me.
For me, 2017, my list online that I posted, Seth, that you mentioned, I posted Georgia, the country of Georgia, Albania, Croatia, so like the southeastern, you know, the Balkans, kind of that area. And then Namibia. I'd like to visit Namibia. Vietnam. Laos, kind of depending on timing wise, see if I can make that work. So that's kind of my 2017 of where I'd like to go. We'll see what happens.
Nice. I can offer some suggestions in Laos. We enjoyed parts of it and not others.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I've heard. So I'll definitely take you up on the suggestions.
Now that I think about it, kind of want to go back there. We only got to see, we had a good time in Luang Prabang, didn't like Vientiane, but there's a couple other sort of little towns that I think would be fun to visit.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, I'd love to go to Japan in 2017. I haven't been to Japan. I've connected through Japan a lot, but never actually been in Japan. Mm-hmm. And so I'd love to go from like north to south and just spend a few weeks doing that. I don't know how feasible that is, but I'd love to try it.
Another frequent guest of ours, John Walton, does that a couple times a year.
Just as like a getaway, like kind of like.
Yeah, he sort of lives out of a suitcase, but that's one of the places he enjoys doing such. But he gets his Japan Rail Pass and JR Rail Pass, whatever, buys like them, you know, the countrywide long one, long duration one, and just sort of tools around exploring that way.
Yep, that's cool. We'll have to have him on the show one time to talk about it.
Yeah.
See what he thought about it. Lastly, a friend of the show, Joshua McDonald, has offered up two United GPUs that expire at the end of January. So if you listen to the show and leave a comment on this episode's page, you will be entered and we will randomly pick some winners who will get those two GPUs. So
I assume these are the expiration of January 31st?
Yeah.
Yeah, expire January 31st. So you have to be traveling before then.
And if it's international, it needs to be a W fare or higher and all those other things. So we may reach out to you and disqualify you if you don't, you know, if your ticket won't work, but feel free to enter if you're not sure and we'll figure it out.
Absolutely. So leave a comment. You can find us online at moredotsmorelines.com, like Seth said earlier, or on Twitter at dotslines. Also leave an iTunes review or a comment. Love to hear from you that way, or send us an email. So thanks for listening. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Take care.
See you guys.